It's Reese on the radio.
And Ren, don't say we didn't warn you. On News Talk 1080, WTIC.
You know what we're doing. Of course I'm unprepared. Congratulations goes to Conrad D. in Newington. He is today's recipient of a dozen bagels a month for 6 months, courtesy of Between Rounds, the Bagel Bakery and Sandwich Cafe, located in South Windsor, in Vernon, and in Manchester. If you would like to participate, you got to go to reeseontheradio.com. That's R-E-E-S-E on the radio.com to enter. Please put in your telephone number. Please put in your date of birth in order for you to win. You can enter as many times as you like. It'll only up your chances in order to win. You must also live in the state of Connecticut, and you cannot have won within the last 6 months. We're going to get to your phone calls after weather and traffic. But I want to give a shout-out to Dave Roca. And if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, he's going to have to call me and let me know. He is the owner and general manager of Fast Pitch Nation Park in Windsor. Roseanne and I went there this weekend to go check it out. I want to thank mailman Mike for sending us out there because he wanted us to see the facility. I got to tell you, it's the coolest thing. You know how lacrosse is really, really big with like the college boys and the girls play as well. But softball, girls softball, they've got all of these baseball fields or softball fields. I think it's like 15 of them or something. It's like almost all of them were packed, loaded with girls playing softball. And they are serious contenders. It's such a great atmosphere, and all the girls are there, and they're playing. They're competitive. They're chanting, and they're shouting each other out. It's such an amazing thing to watch. But Fast Pitch Nation Park was a lot of fun for us to go. I want to go on a sunnier day. But that was an experience. I was overwhelmed. I was like, wow, this girl's softball thing, it's serious. Let's get another check of weather and traffic. Mark Christopher, he's at the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
It's Reese on the radio on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
All right, let's get to some phones. 860-522-WTIC. What up, Ralph?
Good afternoon, Reese. A couple things. First of all, your buddy Murphy, I know you're very close. but here's a scumbag who had a chance with the other Democrats to vote just to pay our military. They voted no.
Of course he didn't. That's why I said, I mean, there was the reason why I pointed out his Sunday Post. His Sunday Post is saying that Donald Trump wants to starve kids. Then they get a deal last night, and he's like, oh, you guys have to deal with the pain. So the guy who's really trying to starve kids turns out to be Murphy and the Democrats.
Reese, do you think if there was a national referendum and they said, let the American people vote, if you shut the government down, you don't get paid? What do you think the outcome would be?
Without a doubt. In fact, that's, you know, I almost feel like Donald Trump should have made that, you know, I wish he had done a public appeal to the American people, like had an address from the Oval Office during prime time and would have addressed that and even had suggested it as a conversation. Think about this, Ralph. If he had said that, like sort of like a fireside chat, and it said that the next time that there's a government shutdown, that members of Congress should not be paid, forcing news media on the Sunday shows to ask their guests that question and then getting them on the record to say, well, the president is crazy about that. You know, we're supposed to be, make them have that conversation with their constituents. And that would definitely have put the rub on the whole deal. That's what should have happened.
Right. Reese, the main reason I called is I had a conversation with two friends of mine, both black.
Uh-huh.
And unbelievable the way these people think. First of all, they're Democrats, and I think, and I, you know, I'm just maybe pushing a little bit, if a Democrat raped their mother or wife, they would still vote for them. But when I was talking about the shutdown, and first thing, well, the Republicans control everything. I says, no, they need 60 votes in the Senate. So they control everything. I says, they need 60 votes in the Senate. Is that true or not? No answer.
Yeah, but you're never going to get that. Did you hear what Carville said last week? Did you hear what Carville said about that? Okay, this was insane. For those of you who missed it, let me tell you what James Carville, the old raging Cajun, said. After the Tuesday vote last week, he said, just for giggles, he is going to run a convicted pedophile under the Democrat ticket, and I bet you he will win. The reason why he said that was because he couldn't believe that Jay Johnson, or Jay Jones is his name, the attorney, now attorney general elect in Virginia, after saying that he would kill a Republican's children, much less shoot the speaker in the head, because in order for them to understand, Republicans for that matter, that they would vote for him in Virginia. He's saying that Democrats at this point have gotten so off the rails, it doesn't matter what the individual would have done, they'd vote for him. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's, and he's saying the quiet part out loud. The hatred of Republicans, and for that matter, Donald Trump, is that those folks will go to any ends of the earth to vote for a Democrat. They've got no morals. While they sit around telling us about theirs, about ours, they have none.
But this guy also said he wanted to see more cops killed, didn't he?
Yes. Again, saying this guy said exactly what Democrats think of everything, from Republican children to Republicans overall to the police and everything. And Democrats look at that and they go, yep, that's my guy. And that's why Carville said what he said.
These people, in my mind, they're not Americans. They're Democrats. And there's a great big difference between a hardcore Democrat and being a loyal American. And these people do not care about their country. Their party comes first. Their country comes last.
Yep. Again,
will they ever wake up, Reese?
Who knows? Who knows? Who can never know? Let's go to Dan in East Windsor. How are you, Dan?
Hey, Reese. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, just out of curiosity, would that favorite listener happen to be somebody in Hampton?
No, not him. Absolutely not. What's going on?
Hey, just a quick note before I get to what I called about. If you want to see some mansions, you ought to go to the mansions in Newport, Rhode Island. And I believe they actually have tours. I'm not positive on that, but I believe they do.
I've actually been to several places in Rhode Island, but I got it. Yeah, Roland said, well, we're talking about Connecticut. No, I've been to plenty of places, but I'm just saying that was a little kind of like place that I had never seen before. So close to the city, it was beautiful. But, no, I love mansions no matter where they are. But thank you.
Well, anyway, what I call about is, what I do is every time I hear somebody complain about the shutdown and try to blame Republicans and Trump, I tell them flat out, I tell them, look, the health care bill was written entirely by Democrats, Obamacare.
Yep.
It was voted on entirely by Democrats without one single Republican voting for it and signed into law by a Democrat. So it was the Democrats that put the expiration dates in there to begin with.
That's correct.
They could have made the subsidies non-expiring, but they chose to put expiration dates in there. So, and now Democrats want to blame Trump.
You know what? My favorite part about that?
Subsidies expiring.
Hold on. You're missing my favorite part about that, because someone mentioned that on CNN, right? That the Democrats put an expiration date on the subsidies, right? And you know what they said? They said at the behest of Republicans. And my response to that was, really? Now? Of all the times in the world when Democrats could capitulate to Republicans on the Affordable Care Act they did? Let's put a cap on the subsidies, Republicans said. And Democrats went, sure.
Then why didn't one single Republican vote for it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's ridiculous. It was like, didn't need Republicans for any other time except a cap on the subsidies.
and hey, while I got you here, I had commented, I was last week when you were looking for things to do in Connecticut.
Yes.
And I suggested the Broadbrook Opera House. You put a laughing face on it. I said, don't let the name fool you.
You should really check
it out. They have all kinds of shows there.
I thought you were kidding when you said the Opera House.
No.
You didn't really think that I actually watched opera, did you?
No. They don't have operas there. They have all, I get, maybe they used it a long time ago. It was closed for years and years, and then somebody bought it, renovated it. It holds there's 460 seats there. They have all kinds of tribute bands. They've upcoming. They got a Van Halen tribute band. They got
Exactly what you're talking about because I know about
Sweet Baby James.
You're 100%. I do know which place you're talking about because I did see the Van Halen tribute band. Is going to be there. I know exactly where you're talking about. But no, I appreciate you sending it anyway.
Yeah, that's a cool place.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
You got it. Tom is in Thomaston. How are you, sir? What's going on?
I am well. Thanks, Reese. Hey, just before I got into the car, I had watched the video of Jimmy Kimmel and his wife talking to those two women.
Yes.
That is total Trump derangement syndrome.
Isn't it? She says that her family voted for Trump and she has to choose between her family and the man who's fighting Trump. And I'm like, do you not know who your husband is? Like, are you the only person in the room who doesn't know what your husband does for a living? Like, husband is fighting Trump?
One of the statements she made, Jimmy corrected her. She said, like, it might be. And he says, no, it is. It definitely is. And she says, yes, it definitely is. He, like, corrected her on one of her statements. And she said every time, like, Trump does something, she feels like a wound that one of her family members, her uncles or her cousins gave her.
I'll tell you, you know all you needed to know about her, Tom? Let me tell you what you need to know about her. During that whole interview, she says the words that resonated with me immediately as an alcoholic. She said, I'm angry all the time. But as an alcoholic, I have recognized one thing. My anger is never about them. It's always about me. And also, my anger comes from one place, and that's fear. That's where her anger is. And her fear is that no one's listening to her, even her own family. She thinks she's so important. She thinks her husband is so important. And she is fearful that she cannot influence them, that she has no control. That's why she's angry all the time. And she needs to just let go.
Yeah, they can't because Trump is the manifestation of all their fears.
Yeah, exactly. A manifestation of all their fears because, again, they think that they're right. That's the whole deal. Yeah. They think that they're right, and they're so certain of it that they can't get out of their own way. So the only choice they have is anger. But remember what I said, right? She thinks her husband is fighting Trump, even though he's just telling jokes for a living. He's got writers telling him to tell jokes, and she thinks he's actually fighting the president of the United States. They are no delusional than people who think buying a Prius is fighting climate change. That's all she is.
All of them are delusional. Hey, Reese.
Yeah.
When you're talking to Karen on Friday, motivated me to finally get down there. I did some helped them out on Saturday for a while.
Did you?
That's a really nice building.
It's beautiful. You took the tour?
The windows for them.
Did you take the tour of the whole building?
Oh yeah. I walked around with Karen. It was impressive.
Yeah, what they've done at that place, it's not even done yet, but when it's ready to go, which will only be in a short time. God, it's going to be great. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think I'm going to spend a lot of time up there helping out. It's a beautiful place.
She seems like a really good person.
She is. She's the best.
I told her I'd give her any help she needed in the building. So
Tom, thank you that this show inspired you to do that. I hope it inspires more. But thank you for going up there and volunteering, man. It means a lot.
I wanted to get up early in the morning and come meet you this morning, but I didn't make it.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. You have plenty of time, I promise.
All right, I'll talk to you.
You got it, buddy. Let's go. Hey, Rudy, what's going on, boss man?
Oh, girlfriend. He stole my thunder. I thought you were talking about Tim as well.
No, I'm talking about somebody else.
He's one of the reasons why I called in. But first, I got to address you with this Elizabeth Park thing.
Oh, yeah. What about
Do you remember D. Brown?
No, that's not ringing a bell. I don't know why.
First round draft pick of the Boston Celtics, 91-92.
Oh, no, definitely wouldn't remember him. That was late for me. Or too early for me, I should say.
He gets 91?
Yeah. If, as far as Celtics was concerned, yeah, way too early. I was still riding with those ridiculous Knicks.
Oh, Bernard King days.
Exactly.
That was a sad sack of you-know-what. My backcourt teammate in high school from Bed-Stuy, from the projects, and he's like, Bernard's going to beat Larry Bird.
Sure enough did. But we had many high hopes for that loser.
Yeah, and Spike Lee. Anyways, D. Brown, black guy, gets signed by Celtics, gets a huge signing bonus, first-round pick. He's buying a house in Wellesley, Massachusetts, which I'm sure you're well aware of what that is.
Sure, sure.
He walks into a bank to get a mortgage.
Really?
MS Hartford.
Right.
They're going to call the police if you show up there.
Oh, that's don't say that. I drove through that neighborhood.
But did you get out and go into a bank?
No, I was trying to make it to a press conference. I wasn't trying to. Look. See,
I'm just making a point.
You
That's
people,
how they are.
Listen to me. Let me tell you something. I get this all the time. I get told all the time, don't go through that neighborhood. They'll stop you. I'm like, come on. I never had anybody. It'd be something different if I look like Little Wayne walking through the neighborhood. When I walk through a neighborhood, people always know.
With your hood and your hat and your scruff on your face?
Nah,
I'm surprised you don't have a box on your back.
Listen to me. I walk through plenty of neighborhoods. And you know,
I'm assuming you dress better when you go out than when you're on Twitter.
No, in a t-shirt and a hat is what I wear in West End, but I'll usually wear like
all right, they're going to call the police on you.
Wear a button-down shirt. I look like every man USA.
So you got the Uncle Tom part down.
Oh, okay, he's done. We're not friends anymore.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah, what's up?
My real reason to call though is
what's up?
My friend from Wallingford, I didn't notice this, but he was crying and bemoaning to me, and I shouldn't be doing his bidding. But I was unaware, and that his words, Mr. Free Speech Host banned me from the show, and I only caught part of your call on the 28th last week.
Yeah, I didn't ban him because of some call.
I mean, No. He's telling me he heard me call. And he would like to rebuttal. I must have said something about him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it was, but I mean,
about like,
do you want me to be? I can be honest here. I mean, I don't. First of all, I've got no reason to lie. I've got no reason to BS. But you know, I'm very, very vocal about my sobriety. Not that I have anything to be ashamed of. I go to AA meetings, and I talk about my sobriety often. And they say, that they don't, personalities. Notwithstanding, it's about running your program and stuff like that. So I don't talk about my sobriety in a sense of like trying to brag. It's like, look, I got sober. I don't do any of that.
Well, no one should pick on you about being sober.
I don't care. I don't care about that. It wasn't. No. It wasn't that.
Do you remember when he came out of the closet on the radio and we were celebrating it?
I got to take a break in a second. Let me just make it very clear what happened. It wasn't that I had posted something on Facebook. He took liberty to join in on the conversation, which I have no issue with. But it was when he instead said the statement, you need to go back to your 12-step program on the post, which to me is a bridge too far. I consider that's worse than talking about my mother, as far as I'm concerned.
He shouldn't cast the first stone.
Yeah, and the fact that he said it, at that point, I didn't call him and tell him you're banned from the program. I didn't tell him. I immediately unfriended him on both sides of the platform and just said, I'm just not.
Smartest thing you did this year.
And just said, no, after that, I'm just like, there's nothing else to say. It wasn't so much that it was cruel, it was unnecessary. You could have a debate with me, but you don't have to go that low. Anyway, let me get the weather and traffic. God bless you, Rudy.
Don't let Paul back on.
I got to go. Let's get another check of weather and traffic. Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, man.
Stay locked in. Locked in. Reese on the radio is on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
All right, we are back. Hollywood news also coming up. A franchise that I love. And I know I talk about how silly sequels can be, but there are some franchises out there that have made sequels that I really, really enjoyed. So I hear that a new one is in the works. The star of the franchise has already talked about is on board. So that's coming up. And I also have some other news about Margot Robbie, which what am I not getting about Margot Robbie? What am I not getting about her? Roland, do you know her? She played in the Barbie movie. What am I not understanding about her? I get she's blonde, she's pretty. You know, I get that, you know, she's statuesque, and you know, it's nothing wrong with her. I mean, I look at her, she's pretty, but I'm not getting the fanfare about Margot Robbie. Julia Roberts was considered, you know, much more Hollywood than Margot Robbie. And I know that that sounds crazy because Julia Roberts is, you know, she's a Hollywood 7. Margot Robbie's clearly like a 10, 12, without a doubt. But I'm not enthusiastic about her when I see her, with the exception of Margot Robbie in that movie, I, Tanya. Did you see that? About Tanya Harding?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you have to see. Even if you don't know the Tanya Harding story, like if you know a little bit about it, Margot Robbie kills that movie. It was absolutely great. And
I liked her in the Will Smith movie. Focus?
Focus. Yeah. You liked her in that?
Yeah.
I never watched that.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Yeah, everybody said that it was. Yeah, people liked her in that. But I don't get, like, the fascination with her. I would have never seen the Barbie movie anyway. But I, Tanya was so good, probably because I knew that story backwards and forwards. But Margot Robbie just really, really, like, she did a great job on that film. It's just I couldn't leave my seat watching that movie.
She was Suicide Squad, that's why.
Didn't like that either.
Well, that's what made everybody go crazy.
Is that what everybody's crazy about her?
Yeah.
Okay, because she played, I'm assuming she played that role so well, in their opinion, of Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Joker's girlfriend.
Yeah. I like I said, I watched it, and I was just like, Like, because you know who played, was the Harley Quinn in the Joaquin Phoenix, was Lady Gaga. Oh. And people said that they panned that. It was so, did you watch it? The Joker 2?
No, I didn't. I saw the first one. It's so much story involved. It's kind of, I can't get with it.
Let's get another check on the weather and traffic with Mark Christopher. He's in the BPS Traffic Center. Is the rain affecting weather real bad today? I hate it when it rains like this.
It's just enough to be annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it, but it's not really you got to be careful on the secondary roads with all the leaves and
that's
stuff.
That's it.
You don't have to deal with that down in Texas, but now that you're up here in the Constitution State, we have to alert you of these things, Reese.
You got it.
Yeah, when you come to an intersection, take it easy because it can get slippery.
That's right.
Hey, and tomorrow is only going to be like 40 degrees, so... Huh. A little shock for the system for you tomorrow.
The NAACP calls him.
Whoa! I don't think I'm allowed to read this.
It's Reese on the radio.
Let's just say some people are not fans.
On News Talk 1080,
WTIC.
Let me get back to the phones in a second. Julia Roberts is a 10? Who says that? Who would say that? I've got nothing against Julia Roberts, but I wouldn't say I said a Hollywood 7, which is still better than average. You've got average 7s in the world. A Hollywood 7 is clearly leaps and bounds above average folks. But when I look at Julia Roberts, do I say to myself, what a babe? No. I say she's an attractive Hollywood actress. I don't put her up there. You want to know my? I'll put it to you this way. I'll go one step further. Okay, I've got a particular taste. My favorite of all time, three women. And that is, why am I forgetting her name now? But it'll come to me. But the other one is, I've always been partial to Mary Steenburgen. I love her. Ann Archer is another one. I always loved, Ann Archer. I fell in love with Ann Archer when she was in that movie with Gene Hackman. And somebody's going to remember the name of it because it's escaping me now. Where she's running from some people trying to kill her. Gene Hackman is trying to get her from the mountains back to Chicago, I think, to testify because she goes on a blind date and the guy ends up being murdered while she's on the date. And I fell in love with her immediately then she was in Patriot games as well. But I would never, ever, like, no, Julia Roberts, just not my cup of tea. I know, I'm going to get hell for that, but whatever, it happens. Let's go to Dolly is in Bristol. Hello, Dolly.
Hello there.
I know you get that enough, but I couldn't help myself. I couldn't resist.
No, I've heard it before.
How you doing?
But you know what? I just wanted to, I think this sentence that Bob Dole, who was a former politician, a Republican, and did a wonderful job. He was in the Second World War, came home with quite a few injuries and everything. And served our country, continued to serve our country in the Congress. And I was reading a book about him, and this is what he said, and it just struck me. You fought a war for freedom to protect democracy in distant lands. How can you stand aside and allow us to decay on our own soil? And to me, that speaks of today.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, that I don't even understand how people do not take that into consideration, especially as they serve their constituents state to state, city to city, or even borough to borough. You're 100% right. And I think, Dolly, let me ask you this, and I'll put it in a question rather than making a statement. Do you believe that there has been a role reversal in these public servants who think in some way that they are the rulers, like they've become the ruling class?
I did feel that way under the previous administration.
Wow. Yeah, I can see that.
And I thought they were telling us what we could say, what we couldn't say, what we could do, what we couldn't do, and saying that they were their children. And it was not a good feeling.
Yeah, but
there are still a lot of good people out there serving us.
Yeah, I do believe that a lot of people get lost in the sauce of that notoriety, if you will. I remember that one classic moment. Dianne Feinstein was having an exchange with a witness at a hearing, at an oversight hearing, where she made the big guff about being referred to as a senator and talking about how she had earned it. I'll never forget that. It's just like that has always rubbed me the wrong way, because maybe you and I are looking at their roles different than the rest of the country does, because I look at the rest of the country and I almost see them capitulating to the ruling class, seeing them as their rulers as opposed to the people who are supposed to do their bidding.
They're serving us.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, and I want to say thank you to all the men and women who have served our country, who have protected it, and I pray to God it doesn't go to waste.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you so much, Dolly. You got
bye-bye.
It. Thank you for the call. Bye-bye. Let's go to Tim before I go to my good friend Frank. What's going on, Tim?
What's going on? You're going on, man. You should stop by 118 Palisado Ave sometime and visit with us. But aside from that, the Broadbrook Opera House, four houses from my house.
Okay.
Love to see you over there, too. And you're a big hit over on Palisado Ave. We were talking about you the other day. And I was reading The Language of the Heart last night with somebody, and we were talking about you also. But,
thank you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are very ill, and they're very sick, and they call it Trump derangement syndrome. But some of these people you just can't reason with. And so what's the best you can do is maybe understand them. And when I'm trying to be funny, I don't understand them, and I say stuff about them. But when it comes down to, like, I know a lady I know for 30 years in the same community, and, you know, she is deathly afraid. She's an old lady. She only listens to DNC, MSDNC.
Right.
And you know, so, I mean, she was, like, to the point where she didn't want to go anywhere anymore. And, he kind of had to talk her off the ledge. That's what we need to do. We need to talk these people off the ledge. Hit them with the truth very gently and see if they don't come around. But some of these people are too far gone. The politicians have a vested interest, but some people just don't know. And that's the sad truth about this whole thing. They think they're being, compassionate or whatever, but what they're really doing is undermining, you know, the country. And another thing about the West End of Hartford.
Yeah.
You can go anywhere. That's the most sexually liberated. I grew up in the North End. Then we moved. It wouldn't matter what you did. A cop told me one time, if you could name it, we could flame it in the West End.
So, okay.
Just so you know, they ain't stopping nobody from doing nothing in the West End.
You okay. Know what I mean? God bless you, man. You got it. God bless you. Hey, Frankie boy, how are you doing, sir?
Good. A couple of things. One, Rudy made a great point. At one time in this country, and you know this is true, it was a waste of time. It was a waste of time for a black man to walk into a bank and try to get a loan.
I thought about, you know, what's so funny? This is a true story. When I started my moving company, someone had suggested to me, and it was like, you know, they'll give a loan to you, man. You're a black business owner. And I looked him up and down, and I just went, yeah, no thank you. I was like, that's quite all right. Primarily because I didn't want to start up the company in debt that early. I didn't know if I was going to do it for a year, much less two. So I didn't want to take on any debt like that immediately. Plus, I thought about that. I said, if I start small and I grow, then I'll turn it into something on my own. Like, you know, in essence, on my own terms. And it did. It grew exactly on my own terms, and I did a great job doing it. But you're right. I would have never even thought to go to a bank to get a loan. It's just in my head, I just went, not that I thought that they'd be racist. I just didn't think that.
Well, the laws have changed.
No, it's because it's what they gave me. I'll put it this way. You know what really, really put a sort of a stink on going into a bank? It's what I had to go through to get insurance. Was really tough because of a moving. They didn't want to give me insurance unless I had a brick and mortar location that they could leverage. They didn't want to do it.
We had so many black men walk into my father's house with a white envelope every month. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
You know, I've never told you this, but you know, I had an opportunity once when I was a kid to do that, to actually borrow money in a large scale. I remember the kid, never forget him, in Astoria, Queens. Guy gave me an opportunity to start my own business when I was younger, like 20 years old. And, you know, they were telling me that, you know, oh, you know, you just have to pay every week. And I thought about it. I said, nah, no, thank you.
I have to say this before I go. And I never in my life, I am so proud of our governor, Ned Lamont. I woke up Sunday morning and my phone was blowing up. I have a lot. I know a lot of poor people. And most of them were black women. They were just crying. I said, what's the matter? Frank, Ned Lamont put the full amount of food stamps into our account. Ned Lamont, are you kidding me? No, he did. And he was right. He fully funded the whole SNAP program for the state of Connecticut. Mr. Lamont, I want to tell you this from my heart.
Really?
God bless you. Yeah, he did. God bless you, Mr. Lamont.
Why are you blessing him?
Because it was the right thing to do. I told
you. Why did he wait so long?
Well, he didn't wait that long. Well, he said it was Friday. He said it was immoral. Sunday morning, the money was in there.
Yeah, and what did he do? Hold on. What did he do at the same time? That he said he was going to release those funds. What was the other thing that he did?
Well, he was on the side of the Democrats. I know.
No, but remember, he also filed his paperwork for run for re-election.
Oh yeah, well, listen, I never said he was stupid.
I'm just saying. Okay,
well, it was a smart move.
It was a political move.
Yeah, it was a political move.
Lamont didn't give up any whip. You know what? How about this one? Lamont's a billionaire, right?
Right.
How much money did it cost to fund SNAP in Hartford?
$72 million.
What's that?
It cost $72 million to fund the program for Connecticut.
He'd have gotten paid. He would have been paid back, right?
Well, yeah, but the thing is, that money, that $72 million was from the rainy day fund, and a lot of that is my money that went in the rainy.
Okay, even if it's the rainy day fund, why wouldn't he get? I'm just saying, here's the thing, right?
He didn't have to do it, though.
He didn't have to do it, but my question is this, and this was what I was going to do later on today, but since you're stealing my thunder, let's look at this. Here's the one thing. This is one of the richest states in the union, right?
Right.
Donald Trump found out that we weren't going to pay the troops. Sure enough, somebody from, what was it, the Mellon Bank, offers up $130, $150 million to pay them for one paycheck. Where is Lamont's? Like, where's all of his homies? Where are all of his friends in the state of Connecticut who supported him and fund his campaign to put some money together to take care of all of the EBT needs of the people in Connecticut? What? How many people do we have on EBT in the state? 39,000?
Oh, no. It's about 350,000.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I apologize. 300, you're right. You're 100%. Actually, it's just under the population of African Americans in the state of Connecticut. So, okay, why didn't he get all of them to just donate the money? And if it had been gone back into the coffers, either people could have gotten tax credits for it or whatever the case is. But where were the donations coming from? These guys are supposed to be the richest people in the world, and I never see these folks come out of pocket.
Listen, I can't argue the point why he did it. I don't care why he did it. He did it.
Yeah, but it's not, listen to me, I understand the fact that he did it, okay? But he's got 350,000 people in the state who, in essence, from your own words, who were going to starve unless they got food stamps. The crazy part about that is that this guy, in one breath, I've got him at the Friendly Hands Food Bank celebrating the expansion of a food program because people can't afford to eat. And at the same time, he is also going into the Rainy Day Fund because he's got more people than he can spit at that he needs to get EBT for. He has made nothing. Oh, and by the way, he announces he's running for re-election. While both of those things he shows up for. I'm telling you, this is not something for him to celebrate.
Well, listen, I understand his motive, but here's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
They're eating dinner. The food is on the table. I always said I don't care how that food gets on the table for tonight's dinner.
He should have never put anybody in a position in the state of Connecticut to be worrying about government assistance as a governor. No, his responsibility is to make sure that the people who live in the state of Connecticut actually have good jobs, good paying jobs, and can actually feed their family.
That's true. But when it comes to food stamps, Ned Lamont is the governor of Connecticut. That is the federal government's responsibility.
I'm well aware of that, but all he needed to do was tell his colleagues, Blumenthal and Murphy, to get into Washington and to actually sign that CR. Right. And he never did that. He called it on. He knew that the reason why that CR didn't pass is because he had two senators.
I can't argue with your points. I don't care what is.
I know you don't care. I know you don't care because all of that is procedural.
They got the food.
I hear you. I know you care about the bottom line. I get you. Thank you, Frank. I always appreciate you, buddy. Now, my bottom line is I get where Frank's coming from is that these people finally got the money into their pockets. But Lamont knows what's up. He's a politician. He can't be sitting up here bragging about the fact I got them the food stamps while Chris Murphy, his colleague, is sitting around talking about we needed more pain. And Lamont is, on the other hand, talking about all those people in Washington need to get their act together. You could have made a phone call, homie. You could have called Murphy. You could have called Blumenthal. You could have said, hey, what are you guys doing? You didn't pick up the phone. You moaned. And then said, and by the way, I'm running for re-election. Hey, poor folks, here's your food stamps. Get up out of here. I'm not falling for that. That's moronic. Anyway, he stole my thunder. That's okay. We'll get into it later. Hollywood news coming up. Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS Traffic Center. Get you home.
This song just comes on every time Frank comes on the radio. I don't know why.
That's what I hear
automatically,
every time.
Automatically comes on. It's amazing. I don't hit anything. It just comes up. It's uncanny.
He triggers it.
He certainly does.